But when the department comes before the portfolio committee, they normally touch some issues around the performance of SRA. And I think we are very much happy because you are the product of this portfolio committee. So you were established through the efforts of this portfolio committee. So you are the baby. You are our own baby. So you are more than welcome. And we hope and we trust that you are going to make a remarkable progress. Honorable members, let me hand over to the department if they are going to lead the process. I think Mr. Ngomezu, we are here to lead the process and then hand over to Shri, I don't know.
You
should have one. Just come closer to them.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for inviting us to present our strategic plans for entities. We are having the CEO of SRA who's going to lead the process, so I'm not going to say much on that. We will just present and maybe respond to any questions which may arise. Thank you.
Oh, before you do that, I have welcomed you already. We were outside, but just keep it there. I welcome that you are there. Just keep it loose. Otherwise, DD is still our DD. He has not been demoted. Or he has not been recalled. So, but she has to leave earlier for other commitments because there's quite a lot of programs that are continuing with the department. So Mr. Ngomezulu is going to brief us as well as Nevra. So, but let's just make a quick introduction so that when we address each other, we must know whom are we relating to. Honorable?
Excuse me. Gloria Bowman, member of this committee.
Morning, everybody. Butch Stein, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Professor Bonne, member of this committee.
Morning, my CCAC, member of the committee.
Molena, Mugabandu, Joel Machoba, Ilunga committee.
Morning, everybody. Makosa Zananjobe, member of the committee.
Morning, everybody. Nokaya Mnisi, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Archibald Siglen, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Busi Fabuse, CFO SRA.
Good morning. I'm Advocate Zing Tabalitele. I'm the Chair of the Regulations Committee, SRA.
Good morning. Zora Ibrahim, Chairperson SRA.
Good morning. I'm Brian Moholo, CEO of SRA.
Good morning, everybody. Jean Perlmar, Corporate Services Manager, SRA.
Morning. My name is Neville Cheney, Department of Human Settlements, Chief of Operations.
Kabanzulu, DG Human Settlements.
Good morning, Rainer Mgiba, National Department of Human Settlements. Morning, Jalan Paga, CEO of our.
Yeah.
One more question.
I want to
Certified Ethical Solutions.
Ethical
Solutions.
What is that?
We're back in the parliamentary monitoring work for corporate clients.
First of all, thank you very much. I should say to our mother committee, and thank you. It is indeed good that we have been able to get established, especially since the Act was promulgated in 2008, and the committee, the Shura, actually came into existence in August of 2010. And in fact, we were gazetted on the 3rd of September of 2010. We've also been very pleased that your portfolio committee chair has given us of her time in September and October of last year to take calls and also to meet with us. So thank you for that support. I am not going to do the presentation, and you have heard the introduction from the Shaw members that are present, but I would just like to make a couple of comments by way of introduction of what we have achieved. First of all, of course, we have our CEO, Brian Moholo, and our CSM and our CFO that we have appointed, and we're very pleased that we have been able to do that. We're also pleased that we were able to get our first strat plan and budget out, and that we have been able to establish subcommittees to deal with the particular important work of regulation and investments, which were part of the core function of the Shura. And then in addition to that, we just want to say that a lot of this would not have been possible without the ongoing support of the National Department of Human Settlements, and they've helped us from helping us get bank accounts opened to actually helping us staff up when we were only a council with absolutely no admin, and we just like to place on record our appreciation for that. With that, over to you, Brian.
Thank you, Zora, and Honourable Chairperson, thank you, Honourable Members, the DG, and officials from the department. I think we're quite pleased to present our plans to you this morning. The presentation has been changed slightly. This comes after the consultation with the department on Monday, and unfortunately we were not able to print fresh copies. However, it's not an entire change of the presentation. It was to emphasize particular points. We will cover broadly our mandate, vision, and mission, our objectives and key activities, and show the organogram and outline the budget. And there is an overview of the risks that we have identified. And just officially also allow you to see the logo of the regulatory authority. I think members are aware that the SHRA was established as a result of the Social Housing Act 16 of 2008. In Chapter 3 of the Act, it outlines the establishment of the regulatory authority. We are also a Schedule 3 PFMA institution. We are accountable to the Ministry and to yourself, Parliament, and we report continuously to the department. And the composition of the SHRA is in Section 8, and the functions of the SHRA are in Section 11, which is very important for us because there cannot be any confusion about what we are set out to do. It is very clear in terms of the Act what our role is and what the roles of other stakeholders would be. Our mandate
is to invest in social housing and be able to regulate the sector. And the vision is to have affordable rental homes in integrated urban environments through sustainable institutions. And I think the emphasis here is sustainable institutions, derived from our experience in social housing development since 1997, and the fact that a number of institutions came into being without having any projects or any systems, management or financial systems to carry on with the business. Our mission as SHRA will be to regulate and invest to deliver affordable rental homes and renew communities. The emphasis again is on renewing communities, that this investment will not just be done willy-nilly. It will be in targeted restructuring zones where it is quite strategic to the changing urban environment in South Africa, and taking into account how communities have to renew themselves. In terms of the SHRA business model, we're really looking at a very simplified model of investment and regulation. Under investment, there would be capital investment, that is a capital restructuring grant, and there will be capacitation funds being paid to institutions. On regulation, the main programs is accreditation of institutions and regulation. But the two programs talk to each other, and they cannot work without one another. And therefore, whatever money is being paid is paid to accredited either institutions or service providers. For this year, Chairperson, we have identified at least four key strategic objectives. And this comes because we thought, yes, we are a startup organization, and therefore, as much as we would want to do everything, we can't do everything. The priorities for us, one is to make sure that the Social Housing Act itself is implemented, it's alive, and we all understand what it is. That the SHRA Council is functioning properly, that there is an effective and an efficient regulatory and investment program, and that there is performance within the organization. And then we should then have effective and efficient systems. So it's quite key that the Act is implemented, and that is why we have council, to make sure that the Act is there and it's not just an Act. It is implemented, it's alive. Secondly, that then the sector is regulated. And we know that this comes from the fact that if government is going to do investment, you have to make sure that you protect that investment. But at the same time, you stabilize the sector. And also, you bring more confidence to the sector so that you can invite more players to the sector. The third program is the actual investment, seeing money going into the ground and making sure that those projects are there, are implemented. Fortunately enough, the investment program has been piloted over 3 years. So there is a body of knowledge that we already have about this project. In terms of the capital investments, there will also be institutional investment, and I'll talk about that later. However, the key is to always grow the social housing sector and increase the level of funding within the social housing sector. As I said before, the target will be in demarcated restructuring zones. It will not just be anywhere. And fourthly, the issue would be a SHRA outreach, what we call an outreach program, to build awareness and consciousness around the regulatory authority. I think we could pause when we come here and say, this is the first time that in human settlements we have a regulatory body. And therefore, for people to understand and for stakeholders to understand, it would be quite key that SHRA goes out to provinces, to municipalities, metros, to communities broadly, to make sure that people understand that there is a regulatory authority and what its role would be. So those are the four key strategic objectives, Chair. So at a glance...
You are welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. At a glance, the next slide just shows the areas that we're really talking about. Three areas. One is corporate services, two is regulation, and it's investment. It might sound simple, but I think over the months as we deliberated on this, we discovered that it is very complicated to understand the work of SHRA, and therefore a lot of energy will be spent also in the coming year to make sure that we understand it fully. In terms of regulations, already by the beginning of the next financial year, by April, we will have accredited a number of institutions that have already applied. And those who would not succeed would then receive conditional accreditation that they must then correct by November 2011. And those who fail completely, they would still have another opportunity to apply or accreditation in the coming year. We will be issuing accreditation certificates. There is an example of a certificate. I can give it to the chair. There is an example of accreditation certificate. So that will happen at the beginning of the financial year. In terms of the law, we have to develop a register. There will be a register developed by next month. And during the course of the year, we'll develop an information system. The regulations will have to be gazetted. That process is ongoing with the department. And there will be a need to develop subordinate legislation. We intend to at least monitor about 10 social housing institutions, but we will be receiving reports from all the institutions. And we'll have to still develop a regulatory program for 2012-2013. In terms of investment, Chair, with the money that we have, the capital would give us, will yield 1,712 units. But I must say that there is another program through the department, Program 8, of which we are collaborating with the department. And that program will yield even more institutions. So in terms of outcome 8, in addition to 1,712 units, there would be more units still to be determined with the department. We'll have to develop a private sector engagement strategy. They've been lagging in participating in government programs. We will again revisit the issue of co-ops, which has been left in abeyance for a while, and we'll engage continuously with funders to develop a funding strategy. In terms of institutional, there will be an institutional grant program. I've talked about the register for institutions. There will be a roster for accredited service providers. Now, the issue is when you work with the SHRA, you have to be accredited to give service to the institutions. Otherwise, you will not be in a position. There is a challenge, however, that we suspect that we might not have all the service providers that we would need in this process. The process will therefore remain open. We will not just close it because we've had about 100 or so institutions. They might just be delivering one particular service and we're lagging in other services. We hope that we'll be able to issue about 20 institutional grants in the coming year and we'll develop a plan for 2012-2013. That's at a high-level process of the chair. It just shows if you make an application for accreditation, if you get a yes, you can apply for a restructuring grant. If you get a yes, you you may be awarded a grant. If you get a no, it means then you need capacity, and the service will have to enlist service providers to get you to a level where you could be accredited, and then it continues like that. These are the stakeholders, and as I said, fortunately, all of them have been identified in the Act, and the roles are specified, so there would not be confusion. Just to highlight the main ones, the NHFC, we need to enter into agreement with the NHFC. We also need to enter into agreement with provinces. And there is another process that has developed with accreditation of municipalities, which suggests that we need to enter into agreement with those accredited municipalities. We work with NASHO, that is the Federation of Social Housing Institutions, and we work closely and report to the department. Yeah, I think those are the main ones to just highlight there, Chair. In terms of institutional capacitation, the main difference here is that it is either by request or by intervention, because the SRA now has powers to intervene. So either an institution would say, we lack certain things and we need your help, we can then talk about which service providers would do that. Or if we receive reports, we can directly intervene to correct the situation. Going back and talking about the organization, Chairperson, we are right at phase one, at the office establishment. Our aim is to be at phase four, which is organizational effectiveness. We're quite determined that the phase one, the establishment of the office, should not preoccupy our minds and should be completed by the end of this month. And we are on course in terms of that. We will then be going to phase two and phase three almost simultaneously, building the organization while still performing and delivering. And that is the other process that outlined the OD process in more detail. I think the point that I would like to make is that on the left side of this graph, you have operational performance and business performance. And that is where you get the resources and the funding from government. What we say is that is the what that you're going to do. But also equally important is how you're going to do it. And that is what you see at the bottom, that there has to be a certain culture and a certain values adopted by the SRA, and a particular kind of leadership that will make sure that SRA achieves its mandate. And that is quite key to us. That performance management system will be completed by June. And here we take leave from what is happening in government, that from the level of the president to ministers, all of them are signing performance agreements, and we feel that it is our duty as SRA to follow suit. And the performance management system, this is just an example of how it will evolve and develop. This is just a snapshot, and it's a new a slide on the investment work stream, just to explain the framework for investment. We have to capacitate the unit, and that is what we are busy doing in terms of employing staff. We need to develop a private sector strategy. In actual fact, there is information that suggests that private sector has delivered more units in rental than any other sector, and we need to take advantage of that. It will also be quite key to throw out the myth that co-ops do not work in human settlements, and make sure that we invest more time and energy in reviving the co-op sector. We need to continuously look at the growth strategy, obviously taking into account outcome 8, and assist the department with designing and finalizing restructuring zones. And finally arrive at a point where the funding strategy for rental is clear. I've spoken about the capacitation plans. However, there were five that were enlisted. We think at the moment we have to concentrate on three: pre-acquisition and feasibility for projects, and pre-accreditation, those institutions that are new that want to gear up, and specific interventions where there are real issues and problems. And this just shows us money that has been allocated for 2011-2012 and up to 2013-2014. And in a sense, Chairperson, the commitment is that about 1.2 billion rands has been committed over the MTEF period, and it is a challenge to SRA to say, how do you then leverage more funding if you have this type of commitment? And the funding strategy will have to, in a practical sense, then talk to that. The regulatory work stream, and this is new for us, Chairperson, regulators. However, we think that we have quite capable people within the council, and we will continue to source capable and skilled staff to make sure that we don't falter in this area. It is new, but it is also daunting in the sense that you cannot start as a regulator and fail. To recover from that will take a very long time. In terms of the framework, there is accreditation, which I spoke about, and we are busy with that. We are finalizing that. And then the next phase would be regulation. And regulations, we have intend to get reports from June from institutions. And then we'll be monitoring their compliance. If need be, there could be forensic investigation. There could be internal reviews. The issue of disposal of stock and transfer of stock will not be an issue for the coming financial year. We don't think that institution will want to necessarily dispose of stock or transfer stock. However, I must say that we have to remember that there was this program called Rent to Buy. And those institutions that have sold, it means that they have now disposed of the stock. It's an issue that we have to unpack. And under regulation, again, Chairperson, what has to be highlighted is that we are bound to regulate anybody who has received institutional subsidies. And in some provinces, institutional subsidies were awarded to other institutions which may not be human settlements institutions. So we have to verify that information and know exactly who are we going to regulate. In terms of approvals, annually the institutions are required to submit any changes that they may have to their lease, but we have to approve their business plan and their operational plan. It will be quite a challenge for a small entity to be doing that. And then the code of conduct, we have to really emphasize on good governance, financial sustainability, and service delivery, develop a code of conduct. But clearly that is where the education process starts, because you can say to somebody, this is how you have to behave. And we know that people, especially when you say this is how you behave, then they go on a direct opposite direction, just to oppose you. But clearly there have to be a continued strategic planning in regulation, and we have to make sure that we are on top of the performance of the institution. And that is a high-level regulatory process, I think, just looking at it in a different way, Chairperson. This is our organogram, Chairperson. It has been changed slightly just to take into account the reality. We have the SRA Council, and it has committees. We have four committees, and they are functional. The CEO is myself. I'm appointed. The office of the CEO is already staffed. We have the CSM. We have the Chief Financial Officer and the Regulation Manager. The CSM was Investment Manager, so that position is left vacant. We hope to fill it by the end of April. And the rest of the organogram should be filled at least by the end of October. And this is the budget, and I've alluded to that, Chairperson. I want to pause here and just to allow the CFM to breathe loudly just to talk about this program.
Thanks, Jane, everybody. The following slides just give you an indication of the split between the operational and capital portions of the budget. SHRA is able to operate itself in 2011-2012 using 8% of the budget for its operations and 92% on capital. And one of the reasons for that is because we want to maximize the amount of money we have for capital investment. In other words, we want to be able to, on the capital investment side, approve more projects. And you can see the same for 2013, and then 2013-2014 at the bottom. The next slide shows you cumulatively what the budget looks like and the operations versus the capital. And we are confident that without a massive increase to the operational portion, we are still in a position to manage the complete budget of the entity. Now, we have the complete financial information as part of our business plan, which we will make available to yourself. And if there are any questions around that, we will be able to tackle that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, lastly, this slide just shows the activities since the beginning of this year in January. We've been busy in all these areas just to make sure that there is an infrastructure that will enable us to do what is required of us. And that is the official SHRA logo as adopted by Council. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mhulu. I think the big mistake is that it's good to review your plans, but the big mistake is not to think of sending the new information to the portfolio committee, because he has left. So I hope Mr. Ngumizo, because SHRA was sitting with you on Monday, you should have made a follow-up in ensuring that the information that has been reviewed, we receive it to the portfolio committee. Now we are disadvantaged. So we would appreciate if this information can reach the portfolio committee, because we are still going to engage with this update report before our strategic, before our budget vote. So we would appreciate if it could be made available. Honourable members, it's time for you to interact. Honourable Coleman, Honourable Spain.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Although it's very difficult for us to comment now and sort of work on what we've got here. But nevertheless, I am going to put some questions. And I think the first one that I want to put is, in my understanding, your 2011-12 total funding, 226 million, seems to differ from this great big book that we get from our finance people, Gortlaan, in that in there you've got an allocation of 251 million for the 11-12. So I would just like some clarity on that. The other thing I would like to raise here, and I don't know, this may be a little bit unfair, and that is in the State of the Nation address, we're talking about 80,000 affordable social and rental housing units of accommodation in well-located areas, and we're talking about 600,000 households within the gap market. And I would imagine that you would be playing some role in that. And I think in your planning, I'd like to say, what are you doing in regard to delivery of this? The other thing, and this comes from the experience that we have been having on the ground, and that is there's going to have to be a working between the three spheres of government and your communication lines. And I think it is good that right at the very beginning you're aware of, you know, those clear communication lines that you need to have so that everybody knows what is going on. And then I did, you mentioned that your four committees are functioning, so that was another question I had. And your council obviously is running well. Could you perhaps tell us how many members you have on the council and how many meetings you've had and what the attendance is like at those council meetings? I think that is very important at this stage. Your time frame on reaching the other phases of your development, your growth, your organization, can you give us some idea? You've given us by the end of this month your office structures will be complete, then you're working on the next two. By when do you see this being fully operational? Perhaps I'll stop there, Chair. Perhaps we'll come back to some others. I want to hog it all.
Thank you, Chairperson. There may be an overlap with some of the questions. What I'd like to know is, how many institutions are currently, as we sit here now, accredited, if any, and in which provinces are they? Then, simultaneously, something leading off that, if you do have institutions accredited, and I should have kept this for the second round, but I'm going to ask it anyway in case I don't get an opportunity. I'm then concerned, therefore, that you do say... I would have loved to have asked it after I got the answer, Chair, because I think during your presentation you did indicate, and I'm looking through my notes, that you actually don't have the register up and running yet. So it would be of concern to me if we currently have some institutions accredited, but we actually don't have a register. And that's why I would have loved to have asked a question after your answer. Then something that I need to say, particularly because although it's a relatively new institution, it hasn't started off with nothing. I mean, we've got the institutional memory of the previous social housing institution, etc. So what is of concern to me is that on paper, once again, everything sounds hunky-dory. It sounds like it's going to take off like a Boeing. But I'm worried about the implementation. And I'm going to link that to something you didn't touch on in your presentation, and that was the risks that you've identified. There's quite a number of them, which are key, and I would imagine they come from our experiences in the past. But my question would really be, you've identified these risks. Are you putting anything into place to actually address them? Because it's one thing to say we've got these risks and we've got these challenges, but we actually don't do something about them. And I'm going to pick on one. Eugene was at pains to indicate the difference between operational and capital budget. And I also noticed that over the MTEF period, percentage-wise, even though it's of a bigger amount, it was actually there was a reduction, which is what I certainly would like to see with any institution or agency. We do know that in practice that's not the case. That actually increases operation, and particularly in your case where you have to fill a lot of vacancies. At the same time, one of your risks is operational cost. You are concerned that you don't have enough operational cost. So it gives me different messages that you're saying, look, we're going to be reducing our operational cost, but you've identified it as a risk that you're not having enough. The other thing that I'm very concerned about as well is, and it links on to what Member Bowman asked, you did mention that most of your other staff below your senior levels will be filled by October. That's a good few months from now, and you will effectively have been gazetted for almost a year. Chair, I don't think that's acceptable. Because even though you've been gazetted last year, Shra has been in the process of getting established now for more than a year. We cannot sit here where all the senior managers have been appointed and the people that are going to be doing the actual work down on the ground will only be appointed, hopefully, by the end of October. We will effectively have lost another year. If maybe you can give some clarity on that. And the other thing, just very quickly, that I think you need to perhaps, even if you do it later, that you need to point out to the committee, one of your risks is that the current policies do not support the social housing environment, I would imagine. I think you need to bring that to our attention so that we look at those policies, we see where it needs to be changed, aligned, whatever. Because we can't have 2 or 3 or 4 years down the line when things fall apart, say, but the policies didn't support the institution. We need to look at them now. If you've identified them, you must let us know. We need to see what needs to be changed, et cetera. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you for those questions. And I'll start and then it can be filled in by Brian and Eugene. Starting with some of the questions that directly relate to council. First of all, council started in August of last year with the inauguration and had no administration because in terms of the Act, the council had to appoint a CEO, and only after the CEO had been approved by the minister could the administration follow. And then the first appointment had to be the CSM, and thereafter the rest of the staff could follow. In order to mitigate that risk, what happened was, as soon as, first of all, in the interim period till we had the CEO appointed, council functioned with myself as chair playing an almost dual role of doing the executive function, but also our committees sitting consistently. And in fact, you asked the question how many committee meetings we had. We effectively had council meetings at least once a month. We had 4 council meetings in the course of that period. We set up committees. We created the wherewithal to actually appoint the CEO. We reported to the department on the strat plan. So we saw to it that we actually established our subcommittees. Amongst the subcommittees that we established was an audit and a risk subcommittee and an HR subcommittee to make sure that some of the risks that you mentioned that were raised would not get lost. We are incredibly fortunate in the mix that yourselves, I suppose, as well as the minister, have done in appointing the council. We have a 9-member council. We are fortunate that within that council, the powers that be saw fit to have a wide spread of expertise from legal, forensic auditing, developmental. We have a good gender balance. In fact, we only have 2 men, 3 men on our council. So we, and now obviously with the 2 executives, that has increased. So we have been able to, partly because of the work, as you correctly point out, that had happened by the Social Housing Foundation, we have been able to take some issues forward. However, I want to point this out. One, SHRA is a regulatory authority as opposed to a foundation. And that requires different behavioral systems. I think that is also why we couldn't willy-nilly go out and create an administration when the Act was very clear as to what the steps were that we had to follow. I think with regard to the accreditation story as well, the accredited institutions, the Act by default accredited a range of institutions. So just as a consequence of the timeline having passed, all institutions that had received either an institutional subsidy or had received a restructuring grant, whether pilot or not, were deemed to have been accredited. What we were able to do with the assistance of the department was actually get the full list of restructuring grant applications. That was relatively easy. The pilots had been reported to yourselves and to the department. The institutional subsidy has been, as you all know, been administered in various ways by different provinces and in different forms. Some of it is rent to buy, and some of it was for rental only. So that provided much more of a challenge. The way that we chose to look at it is to say, these are deemed, and we sent out a letter, that letter went out at the beginning of December of last year to all institutions. So it's not entirely true that we do not have any list. We have a list, but by any admission would not be a perfect one because we can't go back to 1998 and be able to precisely say that these are the institutions that received some institutional subsidy. We can, with 100% accuracy, speak about any restructuring grant monies that have been received. But because the information is just not there. What we also then did was we contacted, we placed an advert to say that in the event that anybody wanted to apply for the next round, they were able to do so. We also contacted NASHO and other umbrella institutions to say if there were any queries, and we had workshops with them to make it possible that in the event of any queries that we could address them. I would like to place on record that we actually have not had any challenges to any of the information that we have shared, and in fact, from the institutions, we have been told that under the circumstances, they valued the time that we gave them to work through issues. I think I've covered most of the areas that I want to, and I'll hold on to the actual money issues over to the executives.
Thanks, Shepherd. And just to respond to other questions, yes, 2011, in terms of funding, 2011, 2012, the 226 is capital only, and 24,000 is operational, with 24 million, which goes to 251. So the figures are correct, but the department can also clarify the figures. That's in terms of 80,000 units, it's broken down into social housing units, which is 24,000 units, 26,000 units from the private sector, 20,000, I'm now trying, in outcome aid, I was responding to the question as to how do we, Chairperson, I was responding to the question as to how do we relate to the 80,000 units that the President had announced. So I'm trying to explain that within that program, the program is broken down into social housing units, that is 24,000, and we could say that is our primary contribution. And then there is 26,000 with the private sector. I've alluded to the fact that we need to develop a strategy to get the private sector participating in rental, and that would be their contribution if we get it right. And then 20,000 units, which is community residential units, and that's been managed mostly by municipalities, but we would have a state as the regulatory authority in that. And the other 10,000 is institutional housing, which is given by provinces. I think the big point for us here is that, yes, we have more knowledge and more experience in rental, and therefore we would be able to increasingly participate effectively within that program. Our primary contribution should be 24,000 units. It depends on what arrangements are then made for us to contribute more. However, we are bound by our own act to deal with social housing, and we cannot deviate from that. We have worked with the department to develop that program, the 80,000 unit program. We've given them all that we could to make sure that the pipeline is correct and it's verified with the various players. In terms of the communications and intergovernmental relations, it's quite key. and we committed to that we should place more emphasis in IGR activities. The issue of accreditation of institutions, we will give you a full report by the end of this month. The meeting to accredit institutions is happening on Wednesday next week. In terms of the Act, we're supposed to finalize it by the end of March. We are on course. We will finalize it by the end of March. In terms of staff appointments, it's a phased-in approach that we're going to use. But I have reviewed up to now the obligations that SRI had with the current business plan. And I'm pleased to say that already SRI has achieved what we were supposed to achieve in the last in this current financial year, despite the fact that we were only established in August last year, which is a tremendous achievement. And it also goes to show as to the kind of like attitude that has been adopted by the regulatory authority, which emphasizes performance more than anything. So the appointment of senior managers is that you need those people who will strategically use the resources to perform. In terms of the organizational development, the phase, we are in that phase now. But I am quite confident that when we report to Parliament next year, in terms of the business plan for 2011-2012, we will have achieved everything in that business plan. It is possible that we can even achieve more with few or with less. The council has already proved that. The risks, I think it's business practice that yes, you identify your risks and how you're going to mitigate the risks. And we are a living organization. We plan to have a risk workshop with council by June to make sure that now all the strategic risks are being identified and we are able to mitigate that. Now, in terms of the SRA and in terms of organization development, I mean, we have not appointed auditors for internal auditors. I mean, that's impossible. We will have appointed internal auditors who would also help us to identify the risks and look at our policies and procedures, what risks are posed by that and how we are going to deal with that. So I can assure the committee that will then be looked at. Our view is that we should invest more money in the projects rather than in the administration or in operations, and we'll continuously have to look at that model as to how we deal with that. In terms of other policies, it's a progressive situation that we are in, that yes, we developing policies. We recognize that we are a new entity, but also we are a different entity. We are not the Social Housing Foundation, and we should not pretend that we are the Social Housing Foundation. So therefore, it will also be a pragmatic approach as to what we put in place. However, we're not going to throw anything that was good from the foundation out. For instance, the institution, the capital investment program has been piloted over 3 years, and we are using that model going forward. And that is what has enabled us to be able to spend money on capital projects up to now. We used that experience. I think, Chairperson, I have covered most of the points. I'm not sure if there are any that still has to be covered.
Of the monitoring and mechanism. You just mentioned in passing, but there's no meter. I think it's not strong. You are not coming up strongly. There's no plan, in fact, that you come up strongly with it.
Yes, I think that it would be good for us, because I think, and again, we just talk from experience, you know, and that monitoring, and I think it you know, you will need to ensure that the state of the rental stock is in fairly good condition. And I think that's the part that where I see it, and I think that comes under your functions as under 11.3. And it would be good to hear. Can I also just, whilst I have got the floor, say, can we just have those couple of slides, because the slide that we've got on the finance that you've put up there is not correct. In fact, ours is 245. Okay.
Yeah. I think one addition is in relation to the donor fund, because in your slides at the beginning you mentioned that, in fact, even the legislation, it does give you that opportunity to raise funds. So you have not reported about it. I don't know. Yeah.
Again, to answer the last question first, we have had some meetings with donors, potential donors like DIG and AFD, the French Development Agency. But what our approach has been is to look at those institutions like NHFC that we are obligated to create an agreement with, to use that as a base, and we are intending, if you can help me with the date, to have a workshop where we also have the financial institutions present, so that we can work through some of these issues to leverage up how we can get the money. Because if you look at what we're speaking about, we're speaking about from existing MTF funding, just over 9,000 units. What we are charged with delivering is around 24,000 units. So we're looking for the wherewithal to leverage that up. The accreditation process of municipalities has just happened. So there are a whole host of things. The reason we're a bit vague on that is it's work in progress right as we speak, but it's not an area that we can say definitively this is how we're going to do it. We also don't want to have elaborate plans in our heads before we've tested out the feasibility with what works with the institutions in this environment. And I think we would do that. That also goes to the monitoring and evaluation section. You may be aware that there have been, again, speaking about the legacy, there has been some self-regulation attempts by the social housing institutions. What we want to do is we want to look at what the best practice is about using those self-regulatory tools, but also being able to bring in the discipline of a very formalized monitoring and evaluation system without running automatically to the most expensive forensic systems up front. Because if we can get the marriage of self-regulation with good systematic approach, and actually in our accreditation criteria also be able to weed out a lot of the problems, we think we'd have a much more cost-efficient and sustainable system that is happening. Again, we speak about, you know, we literally have been around for 6 months. So this is very much work in progress, and we are not dealing with it, but we'll be dealing with it in terms of an evolutionary process, because we want to do those things that we absolutely have to, that we've been charged by the Act to do, and then work from that and use that as a basis of knowledge on which to build.
Yeah.
The portfolio committee to present the regulation. Mr. Mbonwe.
Chair, I must say we are almost ready. As
soon as we have finalized those regulations between us and the institutions, we will approach the portfolio committee. Or they are finalized, I'm told. Our legal section, together with them, have already finalized. They just need a date to come and present those regulations.
But they must know they have to come to you.
Is what I mean. We have to approach the chair of the portfolio to secure a date.
Oh, thank you very much, honorable members, as well as the department. I think that was a very interesting session. We hope that you are going to stand by your commitment. In fact, that is not the first and the last meeting. We are going to engage every now and again with yourself, and we are there to support whatever initiative that we are doing as we are supporting the department. Thank you very much. Let's get a second presentation, maybe the preparation or us. We're starting a comfort break here 5 minutes by the time maybe Mrs. Zera and our way Ralph.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, portfolio committee members. And if there are anything that you want to guide us on, we certainly don't pretend that we have any and all of the answers, and we will take your guidance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Until the end of May.
Yeah. No, that's good, but no, that's what you want.
Yeah.
No,
we appreciate it. I'm sure May it was born again.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
No, we must do that. We must do that.
We must.
Good work.
Yeah.
Good work. Good work.
But to all right.
No, I'm like, I can't complain.
Thank you.
Okay. Come on,
I'm going to say he's a studio. I'll get that off
before.
Now, which place is not fetch? Huh? It's in the Wengenamu.
Oh, I really love it. Bambi.
Oh, man and back with Katana, Tinga, you look nice. Oh, we've got Bella and a lot of time. Andiyazi nalapho fanele ukuthi ngiye khona. Sengihleli nje manje. Sengi floating molecule. Awu ngiya floater phela. Kufanele ukuthi ngimane ndivela kuzo zonke lezi komiti. I am going to be floating, my friend. I'm made to float, so I'm going to keep floating.
Until when?
Until they have decided to go to deep.
Okay.
So then they have to go to the sky.
Yeah.
And no gosh. I'm getting been booze no bow. Come back with him. Thank you very much. I know you're not signing. Kuba ngifuna ukuthi babe ngibuze ukuthi hawo manje uhlalaphi babone ukuthi amabhuku wami agcwele. Ebengabhalwanga uMashishi. Bebemkhohlile. Bebengambhalanga bebemkhohlile. Zikhona njani? Nishiyeke nisenzani izolo? Ewe,
Yes.
They must come there. They are going to come there. I mean, you can't discuss the budget in 30 minutes. There's nothing like that.
Sorry, I've got to turn it off. Let's receive the presentation from Ralph.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and the honorable members of the committee for giving us the opportunity to present our site plan for 2011-2012. So we'll jointly present with the CFO, Mr. Potre Depp, and my name is JJ Faghazi, Jablan Faghazi, CEO of RAV. So that's the outline of our presentation. I will present mainly on the mandate and policy issues and give opportunity to the CFO to present the target numbers, starting by giving the environmental factors and the indication environmental factors on setting our targets. Our mandate is to facilitate housing credit for low-income earners in rural areas, basically on communal land, rural towns and small towns. We also have to support government a program on rural development, and as we all know, rural development is one of the priorities of our government. And we also have to support government's efforts to expedite housing delivery in rural areas through the administration of the voucher program, which is a program that was approved by MINMEC in August 2009, but it has not yet been implemented. So once it is approved for implementation, once its implementation is approved by MINMEC, we will be in a position to play that role. I'm aware, Chairperson, that the department has made a presentation on the progress of the voucher program implementation to the committee. And I can just indicate to the committee that subsequent to the last presentation by the department, we as RALF have engaged with the Eastern Cape municipalities that have been identified as pilots for the voucher. And the feedback that we got from the municipalities is Umhlonhlo, Umzimvubu, and Insikayethu, that they are very keen, but they are willing. We made presentation to the councillors, the mayors, and the municipal managers. Insikayethu. So I believe going forward, I mean, we'll be engaging with the department further in terms of how we can prepare for the implementation. But I'm mentioning this, Chairperson, because it had implications in terms of our budget. So we had to basically take that into account, that there is a possibility that in the near future we'll have to work on preparatory work for the implementation of the voucher program. And just to finish on the mandate, our mandate is to focus on low-income earners, which is currently people earning 9,800 per month and less. That's our vision. Our vision is that we have a regular housing, rural housing social venture capital fund that creates new financial arrangements and opportunities for rural families to improve, so that they can improve their housing, economic, and living environments. Our mission basically is to empower rural households to maximize their housing choices in improving their living conditions by accessing housing credit from sustainable retail lenders who are our intermediaries. And then the second element will pertain to the voucher program, and that will enable them to access government subsidy funds so that they can, again, maximize their housing choices and improve their housing conditions. We operate within a policy context with regard to how are we contributing to sustainable human settlements in rural areas. The first element pertains to making financial services work for the rural households. We enable them to access credit so that they can incrementally improve their housing conditions. But as they access repeat loans, they end up building a credit history, which enables them to access finance for other needs. And the other element is that working with private sector organizations, we are able to utilize our little balance sheet, leverage it so that we crowd in private sector finance, I mean, to the rural household market. And another element is that we're contributing to sustainable human settlements in that we finance internal housing, which is basically our core. So people are able to incrementally or progressively improve the quality of their houses in rural areas. And we also support rural human settlements development by making sure that the funds that people access, they can be used in areas such as communal land in rural areas. They can use those funds to improve traditional houses and improve the quality of those houses. And also people are able to borrow money from our intermediaries and build bigger and better quality houses. We have seen people who are teachers residing on common land accessing credit from our intermediaries and building quality houses. We also enable people to access or connect to water, energy, as well as improve their sanitation conditions in rural areas. And the question that is also posed to us is, what are we doing to contribute to outcome 8? What we have done here, Chairperson, is that we have engaged with our intermediaries to indicate to them that there are opportunities in informal households upgrading, as well as backyard rentals. So what we'll be doing in this regard, Chairperson, will be engaging with provincial departments because, one, we want to understand where service sites are delivered so that people who cannot access this government subsidy to build their houses or access mortgage finance, then could benefit from accessing incremental housing finance from our intermediaries. We believe that there's a huge opportunity for us and intermediaries to contribute in that regard. With regard to backyard rentals, I'm happy, Chairperson, to say that one of our intermediaries is currently working on a proposal basically to take advantage of opportunities in building backyard rental units. So we'll be working with them to realize, I mean, that their business plan. But I think importantly for us that we have engaged with the Provincial Department of Human Settlements so that we are very clear in terms of where the opportunities are and then bring to the attention of our intermediaries those opportunities. Beyond human settlements policy context, there are other government policy imperatives that we also take into account and contribute to. The first one is rural development, as I've mentioned earlier. The second one is SME development. A number of our intermediaries are basically small business companies. We have supported some of them since their inception, and we believe we are making contribution to a small business development by supporting the small business entities that we work with. I think the important policy outreach of government is around we are to a certain extent contributing to job creation and the level of the intermediaries. By supporting them, actually, we enable them to retain jobs, and as they grow, they are able to create more jobs within their businesses. And then at a local level, that's at a beneficiary level, the borrowers in many instances in rural areas, they employ local builders or local artisans to help them build their houses. But we cannot basically count, I mean, those jobs that are created at that level because it would be very expensive for Ralph, you know, to count those jobs because these are insecure loans that are accessed individually by borrowers, I mean, across the country. But we know for sure that there are jobs that are created in that context. And then another contribution, Chairperson, is around addressing the needs of the informal economy. We've seen a number of people who access loans from Ralph and then use those loans for productive housing, such as building spaza shops, crèches, or adding space that they use for income-generating activities. And then around local economic development, as I've indicated, local builders who get paid by the borrowers. They normally use funds, I mean, the local economy, and basically that minimizes the financial leakage. So that's the another element of our contribution around local economic development. Provincial involvement. We are set up as a national housing finance institution. We only have a national office, and we have a national reach or footprint to our intermediary lenders. But it is important for us to engage with provincial government departments of human settlements, as I've indicated, because we need to understand where the opportunities are that we can, as RALF and intermediaries, support provinces in expediting housing delivery. So we'll, in the next financial year, be engaging more with provinces, as I've indicated, so that we understand better where are the opportunities, whether it's in terms of people wanting to access funds to improve their housing conditions by extending their houses like RTP houses, but importantly around new opportunities that will support outcome aid, informal household upgrading, as well as backyard renters. And with regard to the voucher program, the implementation of the voucher program will also entail that we engage more with traditional leaders, because the voucher is earmarked to be implemented on communal land, which is under the jurisdiction of traditional leaders. So it's traditional leaders are a key stakeholder for us in that respect. As we implement our state plan, Chairperson, we have to also take note that there are DFIs that we can engage with or work with. The first one is nature. There is a huge role that nature can play in the implementation of the voucher program. We have met with them. And the second one is DBSA. DBSA is our partner in the sense that the funds that we obtain from KFW, that's a soft loan that we obtained from KFW, we got the funds via DBSA, because as RALF we do not have a government guarantee, so we couldn't access funds directly from the German government. And there's also the possibility of working with the National Housing Finance Corporation, because a number of our intermediaries who have reached, I mean, the limit in terms of our maximum exposure, they need additional funding to do more around infant housing finance. So we expect NHFC to continue to support some of our intermediaries so that they can scale up housing microfinance. I will stop there, Chairperson, and give the opportunity to the CFO to take commission.
Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, committee members, let's get to the sort of the nuts and bolts of our strategic plan. In putting together our strategic plan, we looked at both internal and external factors affecting RALF and the way that would impact our strategic plan going forward. And just sort of to highlight a couple of internal factors that we looked at, obviously for RALF, funding is a crucial factor in our success. We're very happy to report to the committee that in the last financial year, we received 49.5 million rand from the department. It was the first grant injection since the inception of RALF. That funding has certainly gone a long way to assist us in growing our book this last year. We're expecting a further 49.5 for the year after that, and we're starting to talk about a further 52. That 52 hasn't been approved yet, but we'll ask for that nicely. So the fact is, internally, RALF, as everybody knows, it is a small team. We're very happy to sort of announce that Mr. Fakazi was appointed as our CEO last year in September. We further built a bit of capacity in the organization itself by employing a risk analyst as well as a marketing consultant. And we're also beefing up our client executive role by when we appointed an intern recently. Another factor that I think the committee is well aware of that affects probably all the DFIs that's going to present here today is the ongoing DFI review. And although we don't have an answer or clear direction yet, we are playing an active role in the process, and we will continue doing so. looking more sort of at the external factors. I'm not going to give a whole economy lesson here. I think everybody is well aware of the economic challenges that we've faced in the last couple of years. Most of those factors are still around with us. We're seeing a slow and steady growth. I think a lot will depend on what happens in the world economy. And the recent events, as recent as the Japanese crisis last week, has certainly affected world markets. That resulted in high levels of job losses, the economic crisis that we've had. Ralph's target market is right at the bottom end, and those are the jobs that were lost and affected the most. And then we certainly did see that in the numbers of qualifying loan applications that we received. I think we're all aware of the risk of inflation, price increases. Another major factor that's impacting Ralph and its client base is over-indebtedness. We're finding that end users are having levels of debt of about 70% to 80% of their household income. That makes it very difficult for those people to access further funding, even if it is for housing. And that certainly is a factor that we have to be very cognizant of. On the more positive side, we are seeing lower interest rates, and I think that's probably going to be with us for a few years to come. I think another factor that's affected our intermediaries is that liquidity is still very tight in the market. Everybody is still quite risk-averse and sort of waiting to see what's going to happen with the economy. So we are finding that even our intermediaries with very strong balance sheets are taking a tremendous amount of time to get money out of the financial sector. Having sort of said that as the background for our budget, it forces us into a very conservative budget for the next year. We didn't want to overemphasize the number of loans that we could distribute or overemphasize the potential disbursements that we could have. I think a lot is going to depend on the economy recovering and the job creations that we hopefully will see sooner rather than later. This slide here sort of just shows the number of loans that we've dispersed and the loans that we're expecting to disperse. 2010 was really a low year for Ralph, and that was basically as a result of lack of funding, or we've basically exhausted our funding sources. With the funding we received in the last year, that 49 million, we're right back on 45,000 loans for the year. And we're expecting a steady growth for the next year, up to 46,000. I think one thing that we have noticed is that the average loan size has steadily been increasing a bit. I think it's to do with a bit on the one side, it's inflation, building material inflation has been pretty high. And a second factor is also that the people that can actually afford loans are, as I said, with the over-indebtedness, fewer people can get access to funding, but the few that can get are taking bigger loans. This graph here sort of just shows the disbursement forecast for the next couple of years. On the green side is our cash disbursements. We're well on target for the 122 million rand for this financial year. So only a week or two left for us, and we will certainly make that. We're very optimistic about the 164 for next year. With the further funding from the government, we certainly believe that was attainable. I think on the orange side is more sort of a revolving mezzanine funding, which is just also steadily growing as our book grows. This slide just basically shows the growth in Ralph's loan book and steady impairment provision that goes with that. This is sort of, I think, probably one of the more important slides from an impact point of view of where we want to be and what we sort of target at. I think if I can sort of draw the attention to the highlights, there's distribution, cash distributions, 164 million, that's what we're aiming for next year, 46,000, almost 47,000 loans for next year. Leakage has always been a problem for Ralph because it's unsecured lending and we don't have always control of where the funds are going, but we're very happy to report that at least 80% of our loans does go for housing. We sort of set that as a target for going forward. Household income above 9,500, we're limiting our exposure to 20% of that. we're still focusing right at the bottom end of the market with 60% of our funds going to the 3,500 and less. And because our mandate is focused on sort of the more rural areas, 80% of our funding is outside of the non-metro areas. This is just on a high level, sort of the highlights of our financial side. I think what I'd like to say there is that even though our loan book is growing, you would notice that our interest income is not growing as much. And that's a direct result of our focus on reducing interest rates to our intermediaries, which will then again pass that benefit on to end users. And I'll speak a bit more about that later on. Impairment provisions was fortunately very low for us in the last year, but there's always a risk with the type of business that we're in that we can incur impairment provisions. Expenditure is a steady level for the next couple of years. Slight increases, it's traditionally just sort of inflation driven. If I can just sort of say our sort of key targets for strategies for this next year is basically we'd like to add a bit more community-based organizations. I think we've spoken about that before to the portfolio committee as well. It's a challenging exercise to find the right organization and to find an organization that's got the capabilities of actually delivering the necessary loans. It's also a very time-consuming process and a very resource-intensive process to take them from sort of initial interest right to a loan being delivered at the end of the day. But we do believe we've got a couple of good potential organizations and we are constantly working on that. The rand values might not be very high, but the impact certainly is very good for us. We'd like to add at least one more intermediary in the next financial year with a footprint predominantly in the provinces that we're not working on. And in that regard, we also have had discussions with a couple of very good prospects. This the third bullet there is sort of the one that we're very happy about and we're proud about is our low interest rate products that we've been able to bring into the market. We piloted one with Lendcore. Lendcore is one of our sort of mid-size intermediaries. They deliver, the delivery channel is through building material suppliers, so the leakage rate is very low. I think about 94% of their loans goes directly into housing. What we were able to do there is assist them in reducing the interest rates to end users. And I think if you look at this last slide, I think one of the things that we're very happy about is we've been able to reduce a 36-month loan to below 20% interest, only charging 19% on that. That's about 14% less than what the NCA cap is, the National Credit App cap is. And that certainly is for unsecured lending, 19% is really a remarkable achievement, and we certainly would like to roll that out further in the next financial year. This is just sort of the asset side of our balance sheet. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Similar to the liability side. We would notice that our loan with DBSA basically stays stagnant for the next couple of years. The repayment term for that is only starting in December 2014. This is the income statement. Again, I've sort of spoken about everything on there. I think just looking at that, a bit of a breakdown of the operating expenses, you'll notice that we do increase our expenses quite a bit, especially on the consulting fees. And that is, we've built in 1.5 million rand provision there for the voucher subsidy scheme. Because we don't exactly know what role Ralph is going to play in the next couple of months in terms of having to pay for certain consulting fees and meetings and all of those things, we thought it would be prudent to at least put some money in there. There's also, under other office and administration expenses, a bit of cost increased purely for the subsidy scheme. This is just sort of a breakdown of the cost and how we increase that. That's our cash flow. Organigram, as you know, we're a very small entity and we're very lean at this stage. You would notice that yellow block there is the subsidy voucher admin side. We haven't budgeted for those specific positions at this stage. So in our staff cost budget, there's no provision for that at this stage. I think on corporate governance, I'm not going to say too much on that. We've appointed a CEO. We've got a fully functioning board with committees functioning quite well. We're very happy to announce that all vacancies on our board was filled in October last year. We've brought in 5 new directors, all very keen and very knowledgeable and certainly contributing to the organization at this stage. And that's my story. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, CEO. It's time for interaction. The same. Honorable Njode. Honorable Jahute. Honorable Pamela, the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm tempted to say that after, 5 or 6 years of us moaning about the high interest rates, that they've now lowered it so we can now go home. However, Chair, there are some other questions. First of all, thank you for the presentation. I'm very encouraged by the new initiative, I think, that's been shown in terms of loans to informal households, because we are very strong on this incremental type of housing in the informal environment. So if you're going to enter that market where people will have to generally, after they've got their site and services, wait a year or two before they can access a subsidy for the top structure, and you're now coming in to fill that gap, that I think is very encouraging, and I'd like, once that is up and running, that you perhaps give us some feedback on how that's working. And similarly for the backyard rentals that you've got. Having said that, Chairperson, I am a little bit concerned by some of the last remarks, particularly when it comes to the finances. Your staff costs have increased by some 33% from 2010 to 2011, and yet you say that no provision was made for additional staff. I mean, it's gone up from 5 million to 7 million. That's roughly a 33% increase. And then similarly, your executive director's fees now, your CEO may have been appointed last year, but he was still in an acting position. And I would imagine that there's not too much of a difference between the salary for acting and for being appointed. But we've got a 52% increase from the actual for March and the forecast for 2010 and the forecast for 2011. And I think that needs some explaining. Then lastly, Chairperson, I am concerned about, I think the first question I should ask is, on your impairments, you say impairment on loans and investments. Now, why would you expect an impairment on your investments going forward particularly? That's the first question. And the second one is, I think 20% is a bit on the high side. If one can say, well, you know what, I'm going to allow for 20% of exposure. I understand that you're in a market that there's almost no guarantees, but it's still a bit high. If you could just elaborate on that, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to have an understanding of what you actually mean by a traditional house. We're talking about rural areas. It keeps on coming back that you want to improve the traditional houses. Do we have the same understanding? What is your concept of a traditional house? And I of course we all agree this is a very important program for the rural areas. But I'm just wondering whether you have any awareness campaigns to make the people aware that there are these possibilities? And if so, what kind of campaigns? And I also noticed that for the voucher program, you have identified certain areas in the Eastern Cape. I come from the Eastern Cape. Could you be kind enough to give us, for instance, the criteria you have used to identify these areas? We know, of course, we have to have a pilot program, but of course, at the same time, we know the program is a very big one in our country, in the rural areas. What criteria are you using? Chairperson, I see on the finance side, I'm not sure if I'm reading your budget right or your expenditure right. I'm not quite sure what that 104% for consulting means. It looks like your fees for consulting are very high as is compared to the other expenditure. But what is this consultation that can go up to 100%? What does that 104% actually mean? I'm not quite sure. But also looking at the figure for consultation, compared with the others, to me it seems as if it was quite high on, your pages are not numbered, but it's under key performance areas, the statement of financial performance. The top slide on that particular page gives us the figure for the consultation, but the bottom slide speaks about the consulting up 104%. That's what I want to understand. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Mike.
On what? Okay. Yeah, I'm from the rural areas, you must all know. I'm not used to this knowledge. Chairperson, some of my questions have already been asked by Honorable Njobe. So you mentioned that 80% of the funding goes to rural areas. Where is that 20% going? Because this is the Rural Housing Loan Fund. Another question is, how many have you been able to fund in the rural areas and where exactly? So that we can know. Because some of our people doesn't know anything about us. Then you mentioned in your key performance areas that you are going to add two more community-based organizations to your delivery channel. So how are you going to monitor that to ensure that the intended people are able to benefit from this loan? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I also just pick up whilst we are there, under the key performance areas, I think of concern certainly was the consulting, but it's legal and audit fees as well. So, and I see you've given a bit of an explanation. I want to just know, you put here rural housing subsidy voucher scheme sort of under that consulting section. I don't know whether this big jump from this 1.6 to 3.3 for 2012 includes that. Maybe that's the reason. I'm not sure. Because I also notice you've got a huge jump coming in your travel expenses as well. I'm not terribly sure why we would be doing that. The other thing which I could just refer, LendCore low-rate, low-interest loans, just before I do some others, is 9 months you've got a LendCore rate pre-November 2010, 0%, 0% post, and a 0% saving to end user. Is that correct?
seems to be quite good. The other thing I would also like to just point out is you're talking about expecting 49.5 million. In this great big fat book that I have here, I see it's 46.2. So I don't know whether you are aware of that or not. And then just on the local economic development, you point out that the beneficiary gets the money and, you know, the workers get paid. Do you have any sort of monitoring? So, you know, once you've handed over the loan to the beneficiary and whether those contractors, in fact, all do get paid by the beneficiary or whether there's a problem there, perhaps that's not your responsibility. I'd just like to know if it is. And what recourse those contractors would have if they are not paid by the beneficiary. Yes, I think my other answers, my other questions are on the table already. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just a follow-up from Honourable Dagwood. I would like to know what is a community-based organization and how did it manage to get them? Thanks.
Sanko ke lo. Ungaphazami. Ningasizizeli information engekho. The last point, I think, the issue of these backyard dwellers, I think Mr. Mgomizulu has to assist us here because we believe that we requested the department to provide a policy. Yes, we do understand that the provinces are not unique. They've got different dynamics, but there has to be an overall framework that guides the implementation of these programs, of the Get Dollars program. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by recognizing the comments by Mr. Stein on our initiatives on informal households upgrading and backyard rentals. Certainly, we'll be very happy to come back to the committee and support progress because this is a new area for us. So, by working with the department and the provinces, we believe there is an opportunity for us and its partners to make a contribution in this regard. On specific questions, one question asked by Honourable Member Jobe is on traditional houses. I mean, what do we mean by this? Basically, in terms of what we finance, people have a choice to decide what type of material they want to use to build their houses. Some people basically use mud houses, you know, to build rondavels or rectangular houses, or some people will want to basically improve the quality of those houses, say, by, say, plastering, you know, their rondavels and houses. So by traditional houses, I mean a house that is built in a rural area, basically using, technology that is appropriate, I mean, from the perspective of rural dwellers. It could be mud houses, as I've indicated. So that's what broadly I understand. They might use thatch instead of using tiles or zinc basically to put or erect roof on their houses. So they have a choice, I mean, to do so. And then on the question of awareness campaigns, I mean, about RALF, I think it's always, I mean, a challenge, I mean, for us because we work with intermediaries, we're wholesale, so we sort of stay at the back. But we have taken a note of the comments that have been used, that have been laid by the members of the portfolio committee in the past in terms of us needing to raise awareness to the rural dwellers about the opportunity that they have to access RALF facility funds to improve their housing conditions.
we have recently used African language newspapers like Ilanga, Isolezwe. I forget the name of the newspaper in Isikosa, and we are trying to identify others in other African languages. But apart from that, we want to use other media going forward, like African language radio stations. We have used them in the past. We ran a campaign in the past using all African language radio stations to highlight the opportunity of people to access finance so that they can improve their housing or housing conditions incrementally. We'll be embarking on that, I mean, going forward, because we believe it is important that people are aware that there is this opportunity for them to access finance to improve their housing conditions. And then on the question of the e-voucher, in terms of how were these pilot areas selected, in fact, the former MEC for Human Settlements in the Eastern Cape, former MEC Mabandla, announced the pilots in her budget speech for the 2010-2011 financial year. She announced Umzimvube and Nsikayethu, and then subsequently Umhlonhlo was added, and Umhlonhlo being a pilot for the rural for the comprehensive graduate program. So we advised by the Eastern Cape that Umhlonhlo has been added. So those are the three pilot municipalities that we visited in the Eastern Cape. As Ralph, basically, we were not going to take a lead in terms of identifying pilot areas, because we believe selection of pilot areas basically is a process, is a political process, if I can put it that way. Can you take the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will take the rest one on the finance side. Get the right slide. I think sort of start at the top here. Staff costs shows an increase from 7 million rand to 8.5 million rand. I think it should be noted that historically we have always had a vacancy with the CEO, sort of an acting position for the last 2 years. So that position sort of distorts the sort of opening balance, the fact that we had an opening position or vacant position that he filled in for. We did add 3 new positions as well. We did add client risk manager, as well as an intern for client executives and marketing assistant. So there's a bit of additional people in there. And we're also budgeting for the COO position, which is now vacant with Mr. Fakazi's appointment as CEO. So we are adding a COO position if the market changes from sort of the halfway through the year. Our board sort of deemed it prudent not to sort of say they want somebody right away. They sort of said if the business picks up and then we can justify that position, but we did budget for it for halfway through the year. The non-executive director's fees, that's a budget based on every director attending every meeting and every committee meeting that we schedule for the whole year. Historically, that never happens. There's always people that don't come. And for the last 2 years, we had quite a few vacancies in our board, so that also, again, distorted the sort of opening balances. All those positions are filled now. So, again, the 414 is really if everybody attends every single meeting, which is highly unlikely, but we do budget for it. The question on investment of or impairment of investments, I think that's just a description of the line. Typically, or historically, Ralph took some investments in a couple of start-up entities where we put in some equity. And unfortunately, a couple of those didn't really always pan out as well as they should have, and they ended up in a technically insolvent situation. So accounting-wise, we had to provide for them. We're not budgeting to provide to impair any other investments further. Those investments or the impairments there is purely on the loan book, because Ralph basically takes cession of the individual client's loan books as security. If those loan books underperform, we're forced into an impairment position. I think on the question of the 20% leakage,
Yeah, that is always an issue for us. We are implementing quite a few processes to assist us in limiting that. We also trying to guide our clients into adopting new delivery channels and trying to force them into using the direct method of being directly through the building material suppliers. Unfortunately, they sort of private companies out there, and we can't really dictate to them exactly where they can go. What we can do, however, is we can manage how they disperse our funds. And what we're doing in that regard is we're busy with an impact study. An independent service company is going to do an impact study to evaluate the sort of service delivery on it and make sure that the leakage factors that comes out of it is reasonable. We also appointed our internal auditors to go and visit each one of our clients and to sort of document the systems of how they report numbers back to us. And as an ongoing process, we're also looking at and sort of continuing doing sort of dipstick reviews from our client executives where they would on a sample basis go and review the sort of impact that we are getting. All our contracts now basically does have a penalty clause in it. So if we do find that we are not getting that sort of impact, we do increase the interest rates. Unfortunately, that's not such a big deterrent to the sort of the private companies out there. Ralph is a small portion in most of their funding needs, so that's not the perfect system. But I think we are very happy with the sort of commitment that we are getting from our clients at this stage. And we're always trying to bring that 20% down. Unfortunately, the reality is not that easy, especially in the current economic conditions. People tend to put housing on sort of the side. I think there was a question on the sort of legal fees and consulting fees and auditing fees all increasing dramatically from 1.6 million to 3 million. We've included 1.5 million rand, which is just a pure lump sum for the subsidy voucher scheme. Whether we will use all of that for that is unlikely, but we did feel that it would be prudent to put some money aside in that. The other factor that really is starting to sort of become a factor for Ralph is the external audit fees are increasing. Every year there's more and more need from the auditor general for impact numbers that needed to be audited and the performance audit that goes with that. And unfortunately, we're a small entity, so those sort of costs add up very quickly from that point of view. For the travel expenses, we also included some costs for the voucher pilot in there. We're based in Johannesburg and having to travel up to the Eastern Cape. We did feel it prudent to add quite a bit of cost in there because I think most of the work would be done down there in terms of meetings and that sort of thing. Lencor 0% on a 9 month. Yes, that is correct. Lencor is one of our clients that basically has got a very strong social side to them as well. And the bulk of their 9% loans is to pensioners. And what they've done is they, out of their total loan book, they actually charge only the initiation fee for that, and they don't charge any interest on it. I think it works out to about 1.5 million rand per month they on average have in their loan book to pensioners, predominantly Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And they sort of see that as part of their social side. I think that the question on the 46.2 million versus our 49, I'm going to pass over to Jan from the department.
Thank you. To the best of my knowledge, the budget allocation for the Rural Housing Loan Fund for next year is 49.5 million. So I'm not quite sure where the difference comes in. 49.5 million was the capital amount that was submitted to National Treasury for inclusion in their EME budget information. It was accepted as 49.5 million rand and was published as such in the projected financial statements and the balance sheet of that entity for next year. So unless there was a very recent change, that is the information that we have.
Perhaps we should also allow
the COO to say something on the policy on backyard rentals.
Thanks, Chair. In relation to the backyard, the department is in the process of drafting a policy on that.
based on the pilots that were done in Alex as well, in Alexandra, in Gauteng, as well as Orlando. There's a process, and that policy will obviously come to the portfolio. We have indicated, Chair, that there's an urgency for this process, given the fact that there's a substantial amount of opportunity for us to encourage the issue of backyard rental, given its potential to be able to sort of alleviate and also improve the densification.
But can we expect it? Because if we remember very well, we had a workshop in December 2009. Sanga Kuduki, Sasala Nani, 3 or 2 full days. When are you going? When can we expect this policy? It's 2012 now.
Chair, what I can do is that through the Office of the DG, communicate the date for us to come back to the Portfolio Committee on this.
Yeah. That doesn't make a follow-up, sir.
Well, I think this one is a rural-based organization, you know. I'm not sure about that yet. When that in rural areas, anyway. Is really a very, very interesting one, that in rural areas would have a care dwellers. I guess that is a bigger problem in urban areas because they attract a large number of people who come and look for opportunities. It may happen that there are teachers somewhere who don't have accommodation, but I don't think it's a pet care render dwelling. But also another point that is not a very big, or we are not a very big organization. I don't think you can spread yourself throughout the country touristically. I just guess that you must target 1 or 2 provinces and make an impact on those provinces. Because otherwise you travel all over the country, but your input will be very minimal, completely minimal, because and then in rural areas, I can bear in mind that in many rural areas of our country, there are elders who stay in these rural areas, and those school-going children. And then many people who are able-bodied are in urban areas. Many of them are in urban areas, except in Mpumalanga. But I think really if you target very few areas and work on them, but also Director General, I think in my view, it will be a policy issue, and sometimes we must review it ourselves politically. There's a lot of duplication. Too many agencies, too many duplication, less impact in the improvement of the life of the society as a whole. I just think it's something that we must really work on, because it's a very expensive exercise. And then some of them should have been coordinated to work together to ensure that they really maximize their impact in our society. Well, not the number of agencies that we need, but the impact that we make, even if there's one agency that deals generally some of the issues. I think we must really look at it at a general, because I know that every agent, of course, would justify its existence in a scientific way, but I think politically can't be right for us. And I just appreciate this one. It's a very small one of 9,000 rand for rural people, manchurde somewhere in Beti. And then, but also the point that I think there must be minimum standard, though. I don't think we should, in our country still, unless there are blocks really that are made out of this soil and the rural areas that can do that. But I don't think we should fund a mud house. I don't think we should find a madhouse, really, generally. I think it's very wrong. Even if they are going to plaster it, there should be minimum standard that you find, even in terms of the rural area standard. Sure, in rural areas, there are many people who have built very beautiful villas and big houses there. Really, to come there and build a rondavel with some twisted number. No, it's fine, but I don't think we should. The point that I'm arguing is that when a national agency funds, there must be minimum standards, first and foremost. But also there must be clear
way of motivating people at least to stick to that. Because otherwise, anyway, what happened? In fact, what happened in Pegville when the lightning struck there, you can see the problem of mud houses. And then I think we can cause a lot of problem if we do that. I just said that because this one is a very small one in the government. And we should just focus a few areas, make some impact. Because even if we visit anyway, Bab Don Fagas, Yela Bem Shuga, I think that was again this. I'm having a bonus that we found right in Nina, truly speaking. And he has me. Despite the fact that you see humble in the Okishma, and then see more rural areas. I think only one room to say, well, combat Nancy Gilzo, and to a little loan go young, eat for a rural housing loan fund. I think then maybe it happens in one village, and then you go to Kute in one village, and sing at one house. Surely there will be no impact on this thing, truly speaking. I think, Jebab, for us, we should try our level best to work out on this thing and reorganize ourselves. And I bear in mind that is a 45 million rand, of course, we can't make a lot of impact, truly speaking. But I think it's a very important organ, though, for rural people to work on this matter. I just hope that also there should be coordination, the Director General, with the rural development. Because also there are a lot of other assistance from rural development and land reform and rural development agencies. There are many of them. I think there are a lot of duplication anyway with those structures too. If there's a thorough coordination and some integrated approach, I think we can make a lot of impact on rural area. Because I visit rural area, I don't stay there, and I guess I may not know every dynamic of rural area, but surely I don't think we'll assist us to work on this thing. And then my cry everywhere, there's too many agencies in government. And then whether you go to transport, you go to housing, or what is human settlement today, go to water, you go too many agencies. And I don't, there's really no impact on some of these agencies. But I think on housing, in general, if we move again to Northwest, at least, we're going to see the Lamini. That show us one house that you father we found here. One house, not many. This is this family, and this family, and this family. Because then when we come back, we'll be able to assess. At the moment, it's a theoretical work that we're exercising. Don't forget that members of Parliament General, they're not interested about your measurement. What is the impact of our policy in improving the quality of life of our people? When we go to rural areas, then we don't care about many other issues, but that is the impact in what we are doing. Because unless we do that, who can assist us, really, even if we have 20 agencies. And that is my appeal, share that we should work on it.
Well, of course, I'm very happy also that the builders are here. So there are a lot of questions that I want to pose to them.
Mine is just to Honorable Mgomezu. Somebody mentioned a pensioner. I don't know whether from this 1,000 they are getting the month, and then we charge them. How much are we charging now the pension? Those people are getting nothing from is according to so small. Yeah, and we put on the loan
Chairperson, I asked as to how many they have been able to fund and where. That question was not answered. I want to know the number, Chairperson.
The number, let's forgive them for the actual number because they have to give us those figures during the annual report. Can we request your indulgence, Honorable Members? But I think your question has been also covered by Honorable Richard to say, at a later stage, we really, really, just a living example. I think that point has been
taken nothing and would alone stories. Umdu are rural, we are pambana rural. So what I will go on other, I think he has covered. But the issue of the interest, I think it is important because those people they are seemingly to be they are vulnerable. The pensioners. So if you can address that one. And I think in future we have to assist us with the list of the CPOs that you are working together with. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. We had not yet finished answering questions. There was one question that was asked by Honorable Bowman regarding what he said on local economic development, whether people who actually assist borrowers to build are paid. You know, Mr. Botfeder indicated that we will be doing impact survey. When we conduct impact survey, that's the question that we ask to the people who have benefited or borrowers in terms of who assisted them to build the house and whether they paid them. But we haven't gone to the extent of actually talking to the local builder himself to find out whether we were paid or what challenges did we encounter. But what we have done in terms of our building advice handbook that the borrowers, obtained from intermediaries, has been to assist them to manage the building process better, because there are many examples when people actually pay builders and then builders, vanish after being paid and having not completed, the job. So we've tried to empower the borrower to manage the building process in terms of making sure that you pay the local builder for the work that has been done to your satisfaction, and also to assist them to have agreements, that are signed with the builder to protect the borrower more. So, but we haven't gone to check whether the local builders are paid. But I do take comments from Mr. Mdlakane that we are very small. We cannot really hide that fact. We are probably one of the smallest, entities in or DFIs in human settlements, and the point that it should be better if we focus on fewer provinces is noted, but at the same time we also recognize the fact that there is also pressure on us to cover all provinces, even from this honorable committee, portfolio committee on human settlements. We have been encouraged to do more in all provinces, Northern Cape, Free State, and so on. So that's what we are trying to do, also to respond with the liquid resources that we have to try to cover all provinces. But we acknowledge that the impact of ALF will be basically minimal if we spread ourselves to the resilience of the situation in Bremen. I think I'll stop there. I don't know whether I missed any questions. Oh, and then on the issue of interest of pensioners, Lenko. Certainly, as Mr. Bokhider indicated earlier, the pensioners don't pay interest. That's why there was those zero zeros. Ulyanco, being a socially responsible company, they provide these loans at a zero interest rate, but the pensioners only pay initiation fee. So this is part of Ulyanco contributing, to the improvement of the quality of life of the pensioners. Because from their own experience, they've noticed that some pensioners actually want to access just loans to buy a few bags of cement to again incrementally improve their housing conditions. And looking at the income levels of pensioners, they don't charge them interest, but they pay initiation fee.
How high is it's
about 57, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a figure.
57, and what? Oh. Not too much.
I just wanted to find out if there's perhaps a maximum limit on which a pensioner can get a loan.
Yes, there is a limit to it. I think the limit is set at about 2,000 rand.
Three or two. Maximum. Rob, I need 2,000 rand.
Maximum. is 2,000. Who's out there is a day, the man. I think it. Honorable members, I think DJ, you still owe us a presentation on a restructuring of your entities. Because I think a fully detailed, as we have heard, with the members now are concerned about the agencies' needs, but at the same time, we need to ensure that as this is the corner, this restructure surrounding it. So that we receive the end product as our Vuela Funk at the end of the day. Mr. Ngomezu.
Thank you, Chairperson. The department is cognizant of the remarks which were made by honorable members, especially Ubaba Mtakane. The department is currently working on review of the DFIs with a view on amalgamation of these DFIs into increasing their E-Lent asset base so that they can be effective in funding or oiling the delivery of the human settlements. We are currently internally busy with that. We are scanning the environment. We are as soon as the product is evotiwe, we will approach a committee just to take you through the whole thing so that you are apprised of the direction which the department wants to take together with the minister. I would also perhaps discuss Nasvoma as we take amatours towards provinces. Maybe bound the information with Ralph. They have a list of beneficiaries in various provinces in which perhaps you could, whilst on a visit to a province, you may also touch base with those beneficiaries. Ngoba's corner, they are not just ghost beneficiaries. I've been to Bizana. I've seen those beneficiaries.
Very much, members, and well to Ralph. We are looking forward to be in the Eastern Cape. I strongly believe that you are going to monitor that process. And that process must not be stalled by the political, people on the ground, they will fight and fight. You must rise above those issues. Involve the political leadership, but at the same time, the process must not be stalled. When you come here before this portfolio committee, we need you to report progress because this has been long overdue, this program. You know. Thank you very much. Tea is ready outside. By the time UNHBRC, they are trying to settle themselves. Only 5 minutes.
No, there are no questions.
When I qualify for a loan, unfortunately.
I think 11, 12, 22 minutes.
No.
know.